Welcome to Talking Baseball. Happy Monday. We got Oscar Mercado on the pot. Let's do it. What's going on, everybody? Hope you had a fantastic weekend. Welcome back. It's Talking Baseball. My name's Jimmy. I got Jake with me. We got Minnesota legend, the pride of Minnesota, Trevor Plouffe, producer BBD in the corner. And we just wrapped up a conversation with Oscar Mercado. Broke out last season, got himself cemented into the tool hole with the Indians when they were chasing for a while. You remember? Like, they were like, ooh, they could do it. They could get that wild card. And they brought Puig over, and there was Mercado in the two hole. It was just like a solid lineup, and he was doing his thing. So we just wrapped up a conversation with him. What'd you guys think, Jake?
I liked him. I think, you know, he was a little reserved, but he started rolling, and he was having a good time. The Plouffe highlights, I won't talk about that. But, yeah, man, this is a dude that, Jim, I know we get caught up in looking at different Rookie of the Year classes sometimes. He was one of eight guys in the AL that got Rookie of the Year votes. And, like, listen to these names. I mean, Yordan Alvarez, John Means, Brandon Lowe, Eloy Jimenez, Kevin Biggio, Arias, Vladdy Jr., and Oscar Mercado. I mean, like, there's guys in that class who are going to be dudes. And I think I was trying not to get creepy about it. But, Jim, you know I love a good outfielder. And this dude is just an athlete. He's a problem. And, man, I had a good time. How about that, Trev?
I had a great time also. And I mentioned on the pod, you're going to hear me say this again, but we've been talking to some young guys lately and they've all just been super level-headed, well-spoken, yeah. Like understand the game. And I think it's really, really cool to see that from these young guys because they are the future of the game. And if you're going to ask me, is the game going to be all right? It's going to be all right. After talking to these guys, I have that feeling.
Just get them in front of microphones, you know, get their personalities out there. That's what was missed 10 years ago. So yes. That's why it's good that he can jump on and talk with us about all this, you know, a rough debut, but I'm glad he can laugh about it. It's funny. The hit by pitch, you know, well, let's throw it right to the interview. But first we have to let you know that this conversation with Oscar Mercado and Trevor Plouffe's love for these young baseball players is brought to you by BlueChew.com. What's BlueChew, you ask? It's a pill that makes your penis hard. BlueChew.com offers men a performance enhancement for the bedroom. At BlueChew.com, you can get the first chewables with active ingredients. Two words I can't pronounce. Slidenfil and Tadalafil.
Oh, yeah.
The same ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but it is a chewable. It's got affiliated physicians work with you for find the right dosage and the active ingredient that works for you. They work faster. The chewables from Blue Chew can be taken at a full or empty stomach, which is huge for all those people that like funking on a full stomach. Online physician consultant is free, so it is cheaper than those other two. It only takes a few minutes to connect with BlueChew.com affiliated physician. And if you qualify, you get prescribed online quickly. So no in-person doctor visit. You just sign up. They send it to your door. You have sex.
Can I ask a question?
That works. Yeah, yeah.
Is this only for people that can't get it up, or can you use this as a performance enhancer?
You can use it as a PED. Or so I've heard.
So Jake's heard. Here's a great deal for you guys. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first order for free when you use promo code BASEBALL. Just pay $5 for shipping. That's right. First order for free. BlueChew.com, promo code BASEBALL. Go out there, get after it. Here is Oscar Mercado. Yeah, we get free samples if you guys are interested. Here's Oscar
Mercado. I've never been more proud of our podcast than this week.
We are joined by Cleveland Indian outfielder and former Memphis Redbird, where he faced off with Trevor Plouffe in AAA. We're going to deep dive into that. But Oscar Mercado, Oscar, how you doing, man?
Hey, how's it going, guys? I'm good. How are you?
We're good, man. We're doing the Corona thing just like everyone else, and now news is getting crazier than that, man. But you're chilling in Tampa. Has that kind of been home base for a little while now?
Yeah, I spend my off seasons here. My family's here. My brother's here. My sister. My parents. So just spend our time here. I think it's my first time being here in the summer, since I got drafted. I forgot how hot it is. It's like horrible. So I like blast the air inside my place. That's why I have this on.
It's fun. A lot of guys are telling me the same thing. It's like, you know, when I finally hung them up, I hadn't been in California for a summer in like 14 years or something like that. And things are different, man. So it's funny that a lot of guys are having that experience right now, right in the smack middle of their careers, you know?
Yeah.
But Tampa's, there's a lot worse places to be than Tampa.
No, for sure. If you would have told me back when I first arrived in spring training that I'd be going to the beach on Memorial Day in Tampa, I probably would have said you're lying to me. But yeah.
What happened?
Yeah.
Tampa is crazy with the air conditioners, man. You got to bring like a light jacket just to go into Starbucks.
Yeah.
It's like 100 degrees outside and 60 degrees inside the buildings.
I know.
So it's confusing.
If I walk outside right now, I would probably sweat within 30 seconds. And then if I walk inside and I'm like freezing.
We did that whenever we go down for a Yankee spring training. It's nuts. How did you get back to Tampa? What was your transition from spring being like? How long did you hang out in? You were in Arizona, right? You played in Trevor's wiffle ball game.
Yeah.
And then when did it hit? Like, okay, I think I'm going to head back east.
So that weekend, me and my roommate had decided that he's from Tampa too. We had decided that we were going to stick around for about a week and just kind of let things play out. And then Monday came. I think it was either Sunday we met as a team, and I was like, that's kind of when I saw kind of the seriousness of things, like, okay, we're not going to be playing anytime soon. So then me and my buddy, literally as soon as the meeting ended, we both bought our flight back for the next day, back to Tampa.
It's good crazy to get out of there, man.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Let's just jump right into this. Did you enjoy the MJ doc? I know you're a big LeBron guy. Did you watch it with like LeBron eyes on?
Your team MJ now, right? That's what all the LeBron people are doing.
No, I'm never that. Nope. So actually, I'll be honest with you guys. I watched the first episode, and then I went on Twitter, and somehow people like to use the MJ doc as like, we're gonna take hits at LeBron. So then I started to boycott the documentary, and I stopped watching.
So you're a LeBron guy through and through then.
Yeah, 100%.
I was wondering why producer BBD was flexing like that. Okay, I get it now.
I noticed the 2-3 on the poll over, and I was like, all right, I like that.
Yeah. Oh, man. There pandering go. Over there.
Yeah,
okay.
We need more of that. No, it's so funny that because I'm just a big general sports guy, obviously love baseball. I assume you're the same way. But man, it's so funny when those two sides just go at it, because you're not changing anyone's mind. LeBron's great at what he does. MJ's great at what he does. And like, if you're stuck in there, like no one's been like, oh, that's a good boy, and I'm team LeBron now. Let me jump on.
Well, maybe I can be persuaded. What's your, two sentence pitch on team LeBron?
Well, this is are we talking about the whole GOAT argument?
Wherever you want.
Well, right, it's second because Kobe's number one, and then those two guys can battle for number two.
So LA.
I can expect that from Jack Flaherty's boy. So
that's right. Jack does influence me.
But no, I think when it comes to that argument, you have to put players in different categories because I think Kobe and MJ are more comparable in their style of play. So you can debate who's better between the two. Like, that's a more valid argument. But I just think LeBron is such a different player than both of them. So, like, they all can't be put in the same categories. And I hate when people do that because it really doesn't make much sense to me. It's like almost comparing a shortstop to a center fielder. Like, it really doesn't make any sense. But I know what people want to say, like, who's the best player of all time? Well, accomplishment-wise, it wouldn't be MJ either. Like, it would probably be Kareem. If we're talking from a accomplishment and like just where they rank in certain aspects of the game. But I think MJ has that like mythical, like, I don't know, thing to him where everyone's like, oh, MJ, there's the shoes and
the shoes,
like everything, the movie, like everything about MJ just screams like basketball. Like you go, and I think that's more where that stems from. Obviously, probably the best scorer of all time and everything. But I mean, you get guys that average, I mean, Harden doing that in today's game and no one ever, he gets criticized for it. It's like, it like blows my mind. So he's averaging 37 a game and people are like, oh, but you know, his style of basketball. So, I mean, yeah, I'm not a fan of his style of play, but he's doing it. So I don't understand why he's getting criticized for it. And some people get elevated for it. I don't know. To me, it's such a back and forth argument.
It's a very level-headed take.
Yeah, that's
it's way too level-headed for this pod. Right?
That's your problem with Twitter, man. I mean, Twitter, you're not getting any of that logical. You're too logical for Twitter.
Well, and on Twitter, everyone just sends him Skip Bayless's tweets. You're like, if Skip tweets about basketball, they'll just send him your way. Do you want us to put an end to that? Like, hey, stop forwarding me Skip's tweets, or do you enjoy it?
Because people know that Skip gets on my nerves, but people want to just, you know, they
it gets on everyone's nerves.
Yeah. You know what makes me mad is when I go on like online and I type in like how much Skip makes a year, and I'm like, yo, you know, if you put me in his job, I could 100%. Do better takes, but I guess they pay him to just piss people off.
Here we are talking about him.
Yeah,
exactly. Right? That's why he makes with
him. That's it, man.
Yeah, let's get off Skip Bayless. We don't need to do MJ LeBron. We don't need that because we have a baseball fan base, and you gave us the segue because we're kind of notoriously bad at him. But let's jump back a little bit because I mean you're a second round pick and you come up as a shortstop, and you mentioned shortstop to outfield. And I want to know, what was your personal experience with that? Because, you know, were things in discussions? Did someone come up to you one day? Because, I mean, shortstop is like that prideful MLB position that a lot of guys are like, you know, I'm not giving that up. Yeah, Trevor Plouffe, he can talk about that very well as he scooted over to third.
That was so bad.
what was that like for you?
So actually, whether, you know, you guys believe it or not, I got drafted as like a defensive first shortstop. My numbers in the minor leagues tell a completely different story, but I got drafted as a shortstop. And when I first got drafted, my throwing always had some issues. I could always field the ball, but my throwing, there were some issues there. And then I remember working with our field coordinator with the Cardinals when I was like 18, 19, and he would always just be like, hey man, you don't have to stress like every time you're gonna throw the ball. Like every time you're gonna throw the ball, just remember you can always move to center field. And he would always like say it. And I thought, obviously he would joke. He's like, obviously we're not gonna do that now, but like, just know it's not the end of the world if you can't figure this out. So whenever you go throw a ball, just think about it that way. So you take away less pressure. It still didn't work, but yeah, it was just a certain conversation that was had. Couple times, three times, you know, they mentioned it. I always knew it was in the back of their heads. I just never knew when they were going to actually go through with it. And then I got called in one July in the Florida State League. They just straight up were like, yo, you got to move to center field.
That's such an interesting coaching tactic, just telling you, hey, you're having trouble throwing the ball across the diamond. And here's what we're going to do. We're just going to keep telling you, don't worry, you're going to move to center field one day anyway if it doesn't work out. That's the strangest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Well, I think it was like, your career doesn't depend on this.
Yeah, like this isn't the end of the world for you.
Yeah,
like there is other options. So he almost thought that I was putting like too much pressure on myself to make it work there, so he wanted to take the pressure off by letting me know. It was interesting, but I don't know, to me he's been one of like the best coaches I've had in football.
So you moved to center field. Are you bored to shit? Are you like, man, there's no conversation. There's nothing going on out here.
Well, they said we're going to give you like 5 days to take some fly balls during BP, you know, kind of get adjusted. We had a top prospect that was playing shortstop in the Midwest League, and he was doing well. So I think a part of that, part of them moving me was they wanted to make room for him to call him up halfway through the season. And when I remember one time someone got hurt in pregame, so they go, "Hey, Oscar, we need you to play center field today." And I was like, "Are you ready?" And I said, "Yeah, I'll go out there." And my first game, like, I caught a couple of fly balls. I dove for a ball that was probably 20 feet in front of me, and I had no chance of diving for it. But I was just overly excited. But I don't know. It was fun. I actually had a blast out there throwing people out. I didn't have to worry about hitting no first baseman in the chest. I could just throw the ball as hard as I could. It could bounce. It could do whatever it wanted to do.
You had a lot of diving catches to your name, and you got 6 outfield assists. I mean, is that like the biggest flex? Like the White Sox, I think you pegged 2 and 2 games.
Yeah.
You're like, fuck those guys. Why are you running on it?
It came towards the end of the year too, because I was like, man, I really haven't been throwing that many people out. And then I think they all just started coming in the bunch. They all came in like one series. It was against the White Sox.
Yeah. So, well, one of them, I forget who it was, but it was a guy who shouldn't be running on anyone. Like, he shouldn't be running home on Johnny Damon. You had him you had him by like 20 feet, and then the next one was close.
I didn't know if to feel good about it or feel bad at the fact that they tested me.
Yeah, I think you got to reach out to that third base coach and be like, dude, what the hell?
Are you out there every play, if there's a runner in scoring position or whatever, a guy hits you the ball, are you one of the outfielders that's like, please run on me, let's go, like, I want to be tested? Or are you like, let's get the ball in as quick as possible, whatever, whatever?
I'm usually thinking about, okay, who's on the base path. But the biggest thing with me is I like to play a little shallow sometimes when there's men in scoring position, just for the sole fact that I know I can get to a ball back. And if I have to go back a lot, then I'm probably not going to throw that guy out anyways. But if I get short enough that ground and give myself a chance, then I'm probably going to have a really good chance to make it happen. But sometimes I'm like, it depends. I feel like it's just like any other position. It depends on like how confident you're feeling at the time, how your arm feels. Sure. There's those days where you're like, oh God, like, please don't run. Please don't run. And there's other days where you're like, I dare you to run. So I think it just depends on how you're feeling.
Yeah. I'll retract. Pree comes over. That's a guy with the cannon of an arm who also, I don't know if you've ever seen like the highlights where he just completely tries to deke guys into running as often as he possibly can.
Yeah.
Did he ever show off the arm when he came over? You see him do any crazy shit?
I saw him. He would always do crazy stuff for sure. I actually saw, there was a video today, and when I woke up, I was like scrolling through it. There was a highlight and I caught a fly ball and I just went to go throw it in, and he smacked my arm and the ball went like backwards. And I was like, what are you doing? He's like, I don't know. He just like does it. you just can't help but to laugh. But yeah, he just does. I mean, but he's incredible. Like, his talent, some of the stuff he would do, he would like throw balls flat footed and throw people out. I'm like, how is he doing that?
He's a physical specimen, dude.
Yeah. I ran into him on a ball in the gap.
Not a good idea.
And I guess he was like, he stayed on the ground for a little bit and I got up right away, and they were making fun of him in the dugout because he's got like 70 pounds on me. And I woke up the next day and I could barely move.
That's fun. A lot of guys try to give Puig a bad rap, you know, but who else did we have that was teammates with him? Was it an Indian player said like was it Kipnis? He was great. Like, he was awesome. He was a blast.
Yeah.
And, like, awesome. He wants to win.
He loves to win. And, like, you could tell he's always in the dugout chirping, like, no matter who's up. He's just one of those guys that's fun to have in the dugout. Obviously, he like, treats the game differently, but that's just kind of where he came from. Like, they play the game. That's probably how they play the game over there. But I personally, playing with him, I enjoy playing with him a lot. And I like the fact that he competed his ass off.
Yeah.
I want to talk about a couple other guys that tie into your situation, because you come up and you start raking, and I'm being professional. I'm actually wearing a Yankees jersey right now. I wore it as a joke because they're doing that Jeter marathon on MLB Network, and now I think I'm going to be in it all weekend. But that was the first kind of taste we saw of you in that series. You're batting two hole, and you were rolling, dude. I mean, and you rolled against the Yankees that whole series. But I want to talk about a little about that. You know, you come up and you're doing it, but you're also, man, you're following Lindor in the lineup. You know, Carlos Santana is behind you. I know Jose Ramirez was in a little slump early in the series, but he figures it out. But, like, what's, A, coming up and you're in that two slot, and then, B, surrounded by those guys? Like, what's that like? Because I don't know.
I think it helped me so much because you get to learn, like, you know, first row, what those guys are about. They're so oriented in what they do and like in the routine and kind of the stuff that they have been doing their entire career. And these, I mean, those, especially those three guys, like they've had so much success. So it's definitely three guys you always want to follow around. Also it helped that most pitchers want to see me and not them. So they're going to come after me. And I think that made my job a little easier until I gained some confidence. And I think that was the most important thing. They helped me out a lot. Anything I asked, you know, they were always willing to help me out and answer. And it's crazy how much you can even just learn just by watching them. They don't really leave their approach. They stick to what they do. And, you know, I had a blast. I had a blast just being around them.
Yeah, watching Jose Ramirez and Lindor go to work every day, that's got to be a ton of fun. I mean, I got to play against both those guys. And Lindor's, he was one of those guys that just, like, came up and they just, like, put him in the three hole. And they just knew he was going to be a guy.
Yeah.
Like, to be around someone like that is very rare. And, you know, I know what, he's got one more year there. This is his last year there, right?
No, next year would be his last year.
Next year's is okay. Well, learn as much as you can from that guy while he's still there, because he is a stud.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. He's so good. I mean, Jose is so good, like really good too.
Yes,
they're like, I don't know, both switch hitters, both very similar in what they do.
Yeah, I loved watching both of them.
Yeah.
When you first get called up, what's your call-up story? Did you expect it? You had been raking in the minor leagues for like the whole month leading up to it. So were you itching and like, guys, I'm right here. Did you expect it?
Yeah. After my spring, I knew that I had to go. I was like, okay, got off to a pretty good start. Like all I wanted to do was make a good name for myself in a new organization. And then I knew I'd gained their confidence, at least from a skill standpoint. And then I go to Columbus and I just knew I had to keep it going, you know, just doing things the right way, trying not to make anyone mad. And I just kind of went about it how I usually always would. I would be lying if I didn't say there was a couple times where I got a little bit frustrated because I was, it's like, okay, well, I want a chance. Like, obviously you're itching. You want to get to the big leagues. And, I had never been there, so I was just kind of waiting and waiting, and then it actually came when I least expected it. My mom had just left from, it was Mother's Day weekend, she had just left, she came to visit, and then we had an off day, and I was with Ryan Flaherty and Trace Thompson. We went golfing, and it was so cold and rainy, and I had like never golfed really. And I was terrible. Now I'm terrible. I'm getting mad at golf. I'm freezing. And we're about to tee off. And I'm like sitting in my car and I get a call. And then I saw it was a call from Wild, but I was like, what's for some reason I didn't have our manager in AAA's number saved. I don't know why, but I remember I go, Flaherty, what's Manzo's number? What's his area code? And then he goes, I think it's blank. And I was like, oh, I think he's calling me. And then he called me. He's like, hey, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm golfing. And he's like, I need you to go back. Like, you're getting called up. And I was like, oh. Then he was like, I wish I could do it a little bit differently, but we need to get you going because you have to get there by game time. I wasn't able to get there by game time. Like, just the flight and everything, getting from the airport didn't allow it. So I just went straight to the airport. But it was awesome. I got to call my parents and stuff. I kind of waited a little bit because I didn't know if like they were messing around with me or not. I didn't want them to hit me with the bluff. So,
did you take any more golf swings after they after you got that call, or did you just head straight out?
No, I told them. I was like, y'all finish a round of golf since you guys are good at golf, and I'll drive this golf cart back to the to the clubhouse. And we were actually kind of in the middle of nowhere in Columbus, so it took me kind of like 30 minutes to get an Uber. I was sitting outside waiting. Yeah.
How about the first game? You're in Chicago, right? I mean, how was I think you were in the back in the lineup because you went to the two hole pretty quick. But that first game, a lot of jitters. Was it like surreal?
Yeah, I didn't have anything. All my stuff was on a truck heading to Pawtucket, I believe.
Oh no,
like, they weren't able to locate it, so I didn't have anything.
That's the worst, man.
Yeah, I used Roberto Perez's cleats. Like I used maybe. Oh, I had like a glove from like 2 years ago in my locker in Columbus. I took that with me. And then that's it. That's like all I had. And I showed up and I was in left field and it was weird. Like even throwing a baseball just to the cutoff, man, I was like, don't airmail him. Like everything you did, you thought about it. It was so nerve wracking. And then you get to the plate and I go back and look at video now and I'm like, why am I swinging at those pitches? But they all looked like they were such good pitches. So it was nerve wracking. I had a blast. It was probably the funnest 0-for-3 with three strikeouts I've ever had in my life.
Well, dude, I mean, you get called up, you're already nervous, and then you don't have your stuff, your game stuff. So
there's a comfort level to that.
There's a huge comfort level to that. I mean, cleats, your glove.
Yeah.
That's like a baseball player's baby. You don't have your glove. So like that's all too common of a story. Byron Buxton, I remember he got called up, same thing, had nothing. He actually wore a pair of my cleats in his debut and I told him, "Give me those. I'm about to hold those and sell them on eBay later in my life." But going 0-for-3, I mean, did you have your bats? Did they have bats from spring training for you? Like what was that about?
So I had one bat. And it wasn't the bat that I had been using down in Columbus. So,
What was the fourth at bat? I mean,
I got hit. Oh, well, I couldn't. They kept throwing me a lot of off-speed, like a lot of like sliders. I just kept swinging at all of them. So in my fourth at bat, this reliever tried throwing me a first pitch slider and he drilled me. And I scored a run. I can say I scored a run.
When you get hit, is that like a relief? Like, all right, this is better than striking out.
Whatever. No, when I got hit, McCann was behind the plate, James McCann, and he was like, "Are you good?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm good. What a debut, though, huh?" And then he started laughing.
That's just a good time, man.
Hey, man, after three strikeouts, I'm down to get hit by an off-speed pitch.
Oh, yeah. I was like, hell yeah. I touched first base.
I did.
I mean, like a week later, you get moved to the two hole, and you never left that spot. Did you like being, you know, early in the game? And were you surprised by the move up so quick?
No, it was surprising at first, and then I kind of just saw in the direction they were heading, and that's when I was like, okay, well, you know, I might have a chance of sticking here for the rest of the year. And I think the fact that I knew that at the beginning, I probably knew I was going to go down, and that allowed me to play with less pressure because I'm like, no matter what I do, I'm probably going to go. So to me, it was like, you don't have to go out there and you know, impress anyone or, you know, try to win over a job. Like, just go out there and have fun, enjoy it. And like, you can finally say, you know, you played in the big leagues. And I kept telling myself that. I think that really allowed me to calm down because I was like, for some reason, something happens and this is the last time you're ever in the big leagues, like at least you got the chance to say you made it up there. And I think that really put my mind at ease and just allowed me to go out there and play.
And dude, I mean, part of the reason you're in that two hole that, again, I figured out during that first Yankee series is you're an athlete, man. And you know, there's the old athlete stigma that Trevor Plouffe shows, you know, that baseball players aren't athletes. But, man, when you're talking about that Indians lineup and, like, you know, we already did the whole thing. Lindor, J-Ram, obviously. But, dude, when you were in there, And your end of season stats, I mean, 15 homers, 15 steals. You got the long strides. Like, I remember you going first to third, and it's like, dude, this guy is a problem just like the other guys, but he hits you on different levels. Do you take pride in trying to be five tools, or even looking at the year-end stats? I mean, 15 home runs, 15 steals. Do you say, okay, next year let's go 25-25, 30-30? Like, yes. What's your headspace with that?
30-30, baby. No. Come on.
No, definitely, especially just knowing, you know, what I was able to do last year, and then you always want to improve off of it. And I set goals for myself. I always tell myself, as long as you do better than the year before, or even stick around the same level, like if you did good and then you stick around the same level, you're going to improve, then you're fine. And I just tell myself always that, like, I'm not going to try to put unrealistic goals for myself. I know myself as a player. I just think unrealistic goals and expectations can lead to a lot of stress. So I try to put, you know, realistic things that I can do. And, you know, if I surpass them, then I'm happy. And if I do them, then I'm still happy. Like, it's just one of those things where I try to put myself in a win-win situation.
Smart.
I mean, what is all these young guys are so smart these days. It's incredible. Like, that's such a good attitude to have. We have you. We had Cole Tucker on. We have Jay Flair on all the time. You guys are the up-and-comers, the guy, I mean, and you guys just speak like you're veterans, and I love it. I think that goes to show that you have had some people in front of you showing you the ropes right there, because your mindset is perfect, man.
Thank you.
That's good. We talked about, you know, your debut. You go 0-for-3. You have a 5-for-5 game like a month later. Let's talk about that. That sounds more like a more fun conversation for you. What's it feel stepping in like that fifth at bat? Were you craving the 5-for-5 there?
I actually have been struggling a little bit the last like week or so. And for that game, Santana's locker was next to mine. He called me over and then he was like, "What's wrong?" And I was like, "I feel like I don't know. Like, I think I went in the cage and hit, and I wasn't happy with how my swing felt." So I was like in my locker, just kind of, he could tell that I was like anxious and called me over and talked to me for a little bit. And then I went up to the plate. We're facing Jordan Montgomery, and he got me down 0-2. And in my head, I'm like, "Oh God, here we go again." It's my first at bat. And then he threw like a cutter in and I barreled it straight to left for a hit. And I got to first, and it was just like so much weight came off of my shoulders. And I was like, "Okay, well, I already have a hit today and I'm at peace and stuff." And then they just kind of kept coming. It was one of those days where no matter what pitch you were swinging at, you know, you were barreling it up and balls are dropping. So thankfully I was able, I'm honestly convinced that if I would have had 10 at bats that game, I would have probably had 10 hits for the sole fact that it was just one of those days. There's other days where you can have 10 at bats. You're probably going to go 0-for-10.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. I just think that's how baseball works sometimes. It's kind of crazy.
Isn't it the best getting a hit in your first at bat? Just like, hey, whatever happens after that, I'm good, man.
The best things are getting a hit your first at bat and then getting a hit when you're 0-for-3 and then you go up your fourth at bat.
Day saver.
Yep.
That's but true. That does feel better.
Tell me how much better it feels to be 0-for-4 and then get a hit and go 1-for-5 than to be 1-for-1 and then end up 1-for-5.
That's very true. You always want to start 1-for-1 because it takes the pressure off. But the feeling of saving your day in that last at bat, there's nothing like it.
You go home 0-for-5. That's a tough night to sleep on.
It is. 1-for-5, you feel like a king.
Oh, yeah.
If you've got the hit in the last at bat, for sure.
Exactly.
That's a weird mental thing. I don't know if you guys kind of get that, but that's a baseball player thing that is.
Well, you always want to hit your last shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's more than that. Like, they're like, "Hey, I'm taking this in tomorrow."
Yeah.
You know, but if you go the other way, you get to hit your first at bat, then the next three at bats, you strike out. You're like, "Oof, you know, I'm going into tomorrow 0-for-3, whatever." But there's that mental thing, man.
That last at bat of the day is always the most important one.
That's funny.
No, that's me and Jimmy's level of baseball, those feelings left a long time ago. But no, I mean, when when Oscar was talking about making that throw across the diamond, man, when you're not feeling that throw, you're having a bad day. And opposite end of the spectrum, you get that first hit, you're like, yeah, let's put a next one in the gap, yep, baby. Let's make a day out of it.
Man.
And I kind of want to jump back to 2017, Oscar, because you play in the World Baseball Classic, which, yeah, for the Colombian team, you're Colombian. You lived there till age 7. I'm going off Wikipedia, so you
correct me. Yeah, like 7, 8 years old.
Okay, so I want to know a little bit. A, you know, how do you still stay close to Colombia? I mean, if they've got like a big soccer game, are you chirping in everybody's ear? And then like World Baseball Classic, like how was that, man? I know Trevor played in some USA stuff when he was younger, but I can't imagine that feeling, man. I mean, there's got to be such like pride and just everything going on.
Yeah, it was actually really fun, so fun. I had just played in high A. We have like no fans ever in Florida State League. So it was horrible. So being able to play in that environment, I was like, wow, I've never played in anything before. Like I hadn't even gone to double A. So I had never even had the chance to play in front of crowds like that, much less, I mean, that was like ridiculous, especially against the DR in the US, the division we were in. I mean, I sat the bench against those guys and I was still having a blast. I was like, this is awesome. But it was, to me, it was special. Just my family was there, being able to share that with everyone. I had a chance to be around a lot of guys that are now succeeding very well at the big leagues and learn from them. And getting in the game was awesome. It was like my first ever time. I got in that bat and it was like my first time ever just feeling like complete nervousness just throughout your whole body. You're like, what is going on right now? Because you've never had in that bat of that capacity. So, yeah, it was probably one of the coolest things. I go back to Colombia like every year for the holidays. So I still have those roots deep within me. And my mom, my dad, they make sure that culture never leaves us. Talking Spanish at the house and just being able to share a lot of my experiences with my family back home in Colombia, because we don't really have a ton of baseball players in my family. I mean, I'm the only one, but it's always been growing up, you know, rooting for soccer, and we still do, but you know, it gives them a chance to kind of root from more like emotional standpoint. And but yeah, no, still a soccer family. My parents and my brother have gone to the last 2 World Cups in Brazil and in Russia. And they enjoy it. I remember I was playing in Iowa when Colombia was playing England, and like to advance to the next, or I think it was to advance to the either quarterfinals or semifinals. And I was like edge of my seat watching. There was a rain delay, probably the best rain delay ever, because it allowed me to go back inside and watch the game.
That's all. You said, you know, speaking Spanish and all, you were mic'd up for ESPN, hit a home run, and your big yell was in Spanish, like, so that's the go-to. And then, I don't know if you heard this, A-Rod attempted to translate it.
Oh, yeah. I heard that afterwards.
Did he get it right? Do you remember being like...
It was just more of like a thing that I do where I talk to myself. I completely forgot I was mic'd up. And even after someone was like, you knew you were mic'd up? And I was like, oh, yeah. I mean, now I remember, but at the time, like, I hit a home run like that, the first thing going through my mind is like, be careful what you say. You know, you're mic'd up. And it just kind of came out. And I thought they were going to run it by me, but no, they just played it.
You didn't say anything bad, though. It was just funny that A-Rod was like,
I didn't say anything bad.
Let me try and translate.
Yeah, I didn't say anything bad, but I feel like I've always been like kind of quiet. So people were probably like, whoa.
If you're yelling, though, in excitement, it's in Spanish usually?
Yeah, it came out in Spanish. I think it just, you black out and it just comes out.
It's awesome. And nowadays, everyone just yells, let's go, but...
Yeah.
I got a weird question.
Here we okay.
go. Let's get a little Finally. Weird. I was going to say, you know, you're talking about soccer and I see you running around the baseball field and I'm like, you look like you could be an awesome soccer player. Yeah. Then I look at your height and weight, you're 6'2", 197 on Baseball Reference. That's too big to be a soccer player, right? Those guys aren't that big, are they?
No, they're not that big.
Okay. So here's my weird question. as an outfielder now, center fielder, you still kind of want to be able to run around the diamond. Where are you at with your weight? Are you like at the ideal weight? Do you want to gain weight? Do you want to lose weight?
No.
Like, how do you balance that?
I'm actually at a, I feel like I'm at the right spot where I want to be. As long as I'm able to, you know, keep my legs moving and not lose a step, and I'll be all right.
Are you at 200 right now?
No, I'm like right under it. I've kind of hovered around that weight. I try not to get, if anything, getting right at it would probably be my limit, 205 maybe. I just, the last thing I want to do is lose a step, because I know I'm never going to be huge. I'm always going to be a lean guy. And I know I can manufacture strength and power at the plate already. So I don't really feel the need to go out and gain a ton of weight and not be able to move. Like, I want to stay flexible and be able to, you know, run balls down and run. And I feel like it's the biggest part of my game. So yeah. I want to stay lean and flexible.
When we are interviewing a 30-year-old Oscar Mercado and you're a power hitting left fielder, I go back to this clip. When you're pushing 225 and hitting 40 tanks a year, I'm bringing you back to this clip.
I'm gonna blame it on the age though.
you're in center field when Bauer throws that ball over the center field wall last year. I know. I went on his podcast and I talked with him about the play. You know, at length and stuff. And he told me, because earlier in the inning, there was a ball lost in the sun in center field. And he told me the first moment he had where he was like, oh shit, was he didn't want you to think it was targeted at you in any way. But what's, did you see it? Cause in the video, it doesn't even seem like, you know, he threw it.
Well,
what was that like?
I knew they were taking him out. I saw Tito walk out and I'm like, all right, they're taking him out. So I turned around. And I was looking at the scoreboard. And then as I'm looking at the scoreboard, I just hear like a loud thump. And I was like, what the? And then the fans, I looked over at a fan. The fan looks over at me. And then I was like, did that fan just throw the ball against that batter's eye? And then I was like, no, I don't. Why would he ask for a ball and then throw it against the batter's eye? And then I looked over at Greg Allen. And his glove is like over his mouth covering it. I was like, yo, what just happened? And then he goes, he just chucked that ball. And I was like, no way. And then I turned around and everyone's kind of like, what? So yeah, it was, but no, he came up. The first thing he did when I got in the dugout was he came up and apologized. He was like, yo, I wasn't trying to show you up at all. And I was like, it's okay. I didn't think he was, especially because that ball was in, like, I tried catching that ball. It was in the sun forever. I was like, I don't even know where this ball is anymore.
That's the scariest feeling. But yeah, it was funny because he, you know, fans were giving him shit, like showing up his players or being mad at Tito because he was being taken out of the game. But really, it was just like frustration at much that happened.
And that's what he said. It was just out of frustration. Like, and he's a super competitive guy, and it just kind of happened. I mean, you look back at it now and you just laugh about it.
Yeah. It's one of the funniest things that happened in baseball.
I think you mentioned before you got some siblings and I think you're at the folks' house. Are the Mercados a competitive bunch? Has game night gotten ugly? Like what's been going on in quarantine at the Mercados?
I have a twin sister and she's like really smart, but she's like not competitive at all. And my brother is competitive, like really competitive. He's actually gotten a lot into golfing and we play video games together, so he's competitive. But I think from a competitive standpoint, I'm probably the biggest competitor. I always want to put at least $1 on it just so with some sort of incentive.
Yeah,
I feel like when you're losing something, it could be a quarter, but when you know you're losing something, like you don't, it just drives you even more.
That's funny, man. I feel like I'm the same way. I'm a big wager guy. I always tell myself, oh, you're not that competitive, but then anything that can be competitive, I want to make it competitive. But that's just kind of the nature of the beast, I guess.
Yeah. That's how I view things. Except in Call of Duty, when I just tell myself, like, I can't let any of these other guys sitting behind a screen beat me, but they always do.
Yeah. they have different skill sets, and yeah. they probably aren't as fast as you. So don't take it too personally.
What have you been hearing around the league? I know that we're in these talks right now and we're having meetings a lot, and I talk to a ton of guys. What's your feeling on the season happening right now? Just, I mean, you don't have to give any specifics, obviously, but what's the percentage that you feel like we're going to get some games in this year?
I think it'll happen. Like, I'm almost at like 100% sure it'll happen, for the sole fact that I just don't see how you can go on such a long hiatus and not play the game, especially if other sports start back up. I've obviously been following like basketball starting back up, or like the NHL just made an announcement. They start back up, they're only doing playoffs, or like that playoff format. But I just think that it would not be good for the game to not play. And both sides know that. So I think both sides, I think something's going to get done. And that's just my feeling. I'm not going from, you know, from what I've been hearing or anything. It's just me personally knowing that it can't be good for the game to not happen. So I'm pretty confident it'll happen, and I don't know when that's going to be. I don't know how many games it's going to be.
Yeah.
Don't really have any details, but you know, I think there's going to be baseball in 2020.
We've been flip flopping a lot. Let's just do our percentages, all of us right now on the day.
No, I'm high now, Trev. I'm like 60.
You're 60% now. Okay.
Yeah,
Oscar, you're at 100%. You want to even?
Like, yeah, I'm at like
90. You're on 90%. Yeah. Jim, you're at 60%, which is high for you.
Yep. I've been flip flopping.
Give me a 80. I've been sitting at mostly 80.
But those Trev's been at like zero.
I did get a text yesterday that made me a little bit more positive about it. I'm gonna say that I'm above 50%. I'm like at 55%.
We'll take that.
Which is good.
That's awesome. That's a win.
BBD?
If we have to round everything, we're all yeses. So that's
good.
What made you guys be down on it?
Just the roller coaster ride, man.
It's a roller coaster. My emotions are too in the breeze. It's more a me thing, I think.
It's the financials are obviously what are holding us up. We can kind of sugarcoat it any way we want to, but that's the case. And
yeah.
You know, it really seemed for a while like the owners were going to dig in. And I think, and this is just my opinion, you know, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but my feelings on this situation are that the owners, the more and more they dig in, the more and more they realize like 2 years of no baseball is detrimental to the sport. So like you're saying, you got to get baseball back. You can't let something like this ruin a game for the rest of, you know, are the kids, the young kids, that generation. Like, we can't let that happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from from a fan standpoint and just going into, like, the next generation of kids and stuff, you know, if you're a kid growing up and you don't see the game, something going on, for you're going to lose interest in it, you know?
Yes. Yep.
Like, it's like anything. It's like if I go 2 years without doing something, then I'm probably – going to lose interest in it. And I think it's something that sucks. And I just don't think it'll be good at all for anyone. That's why I'm a big believer, but
so much at stake.
We need to see Oscar Mercado flying around the outfield, you know, running down balls, hitting homers. That's what people want to see.
Throwing out slow White Sox runners.
who was the runner? I want to know that.
I could find out.
Slow White Sox runner.
Might have been Eloy.
Is he slow?
No, there was one that wasn't, and then there was one that
you
was.
You robbed Eloy. I saw that highlight.
Would you rather throw a guy out or rob a home run?
Classic.
Classic baseball question.
They're both saving runs. Honestly, I would probably have to say robbing a home run.
Yeah.
Those are sick.
That's a soul stealer right there, man. You get someone that picks you off, you are.
Yeah.
It hurts. Been robbed?
Yes.
I mean, I think we all. I think if you played baseball for a good amount of time, you're gonna get robbed.
Yes, well, I think it was. I think Lorenzo Cain robbed me. I love watching him play because. So Oscar, you watch him play center field. He's smooth. He's like Buxton. Everything looks great. Lorenzo doesn't look that way to me. He looks a little clunky out there running around, but he still gets the job done.
And, it, catches everything.
He catches dude, playing against the Royals in 2014 and 15, had Alex Gordon, Lorenzo Cain, had Dyson roaming around out there late in the games. Nothing fell.
No.
It was like you didn't even want to put the ball in the air because you're playing in Kansas City. It's not going anywhere. And if it was in the gap, they're just getting to it anyway. So it was those guys hurt me a lot, man.
It was like they had Gore and Hamilton this past year one time. That one game, they were both out there together. And I'm not kidding. There was two balls I had in the gap that, you know, you hit a ball and you're like, yes.
Yes.
Both times. I was like, what the, where did they come from?
That's a horrible feeling, man.
It's the worst. But yeah, it's, those guys were incredible back in 14 or 15.
Yeah.
What, I think I have it here. Let's see. Can I do the, BBD, I was going to try and share my screen, but I can't. But it's Castillo.
Oh, Wellington Castillo?
That's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a bigger boy.
Yeah.
He's just like dead.
Got him.
I wish I could show it. Oh, wait. Here we go. Oh, no. I don't know.
Uh-oh.
You're the 5'10", 220.
Yeah. Bam. Can you guys see this?
Yes.
Here we go.
Look at this. Look at this nonsense. It's like shallow. He was on second.
Oh, no.
Come on. So you got to talk to him in the third base coach and be like, what was your report?
It's 6-1. I think
they were trying. That's a lean, yeah.
They were trying to give my boy an RBI over there.
Exactly, dude. If you're the hitter, you're like, all right, Wellington, I'm okay with that.
Appreciate you.
Get a funny. Good bounce, and that's an RBI easy. Damn, that's when we were just running through all those outfielders, I was wondering who, when you were younger and you're coming up, or even as a kid, like who are your guys that you either modeled your game after or that you just loved watching play?
So my favorite player growing up was A-Rod.
Okay.
And Jeter, I liked a lot, but huge Jeter guy.
But yes. Jeter day.
I think those are because I was a huge Yankee fan, so I grew up idolizing those guys. But there were so many good players. Manny Ramirez, Pujols.
Growing up a Yankee fan, was it like double exciting then when you popped that homer off CeCe at Yankee Stadium?
Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
That's awesome.
And I don't hit Oppo homers either. So
it's a big name, and at Yankee Stadium, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it was awesome to be able to do that. I grew up watching him all the time. He was so nasty. Yeah. When he was with the Indians and like the Brewers, and like his first like 5-6 years with the Yankees, he was unbelievable.
His first couple years with the Yankees are, and that Brewers stretch. It was first, you know, people. Those first couple of years, like 09, 10, and 11, is just like the truest ace. Yeah. I don't know if the ERA represents it in the same way as DeGrom and Cole right now, but I mean, he was a workhorse and just won games like nuts. It was crazy.
One did game. You get C- What's
Trev,
up?
Did you get did Plouffe get CC?
I pumped him.
He's on the list. You both got big C, huh?
Yeah, let's see. I don't have good stats against him. One of many kryptonite pitches for me was that backdoor curveball he'll throw, and he just flips it up there, and I can't pull the trigger on it. So I was down in the count against him all the time.
Yeah.
But I think I ambushed and I pumped like an 0-0 heater. Nice. So
proud of you.
Good stuff.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, yeah. Here you go.
Sorry, CC.
250 batting average, and you got 10 strikeouts, one home run. So I don't think CC minds.
Yeah, he struck me out a ton. And like, I'm a good hitter against left-handers. He just had my number, man.
But I wouldn't say 250 against someone not getting owned by them.
Yeah, but I'd struck out – how many at-bats, Jim? Maybe like 20 at-bats, probably struck out half of them. So he owned me.
28 at-bats, 10 strikeouts.
Okay.
All right. 7 hits.
All right.
That's a clip.
I'll play.
Only one extra base hit. But you're right. It was a first-pitch fastball.
Wow.
Yep.
You brought that up quickly. Impressive.
It's weird. I remember that because I hit so many of them. It's like I barely remember any detail about them. There's so many.
And hey, it took the lead in the game, so in the fifth inning. So it was a nice
You know what? I have a story about that. Do people care? I don't know. I'm going to tell it anyway.
All right. Actually, it made it a 1-0 game.
Just keep it
2-0 game.
I was sick that game.
Okay.
And I puked right before that at bat. I was in the dugout, in the bathroom, and I puked. And I was like, shit, I got a hit. I went up there. Everyone was like, you all right? And I was like, yeah, whatever. And I just went. I think that's probably why I was like ready to ambush. I just wanted to get the hell out of the batter's box.
He's like, if I stand in here too much longer, my bad thing might happen.
And I pumped him. So that's my my flu game story. Thank you for listening.
Now I'm gonna bring up the video of the home run and see if you look just like you just puked. But in the meantime, Oscar, can you paint a picture for our Indians fans listening of like a team plane ride? Like who became your plane buddy? During the season,
who's the crazy guy? Who's gambling? What's going on?
I always sat kind of in the middle at my row, and then Luplo was behind me. Me and Luplo would talk a lot. A lot of the pitchers like to play cards. And Latin guys like Lindor, Fran Mill, we sit way in the back, listen to music.
I was gonna say pumping music loud as can be.
Yeah.
They're
fun though. They're fun. The bus rides after we would land were fun too.
When we get on the mic. Who was the who was DJ?
On the mic?
Yeah.
Or
on the bus.
On the bus, Paul Ecky would always get on the mic.
There's always somebody that's on the mic.
He got on the mic and he would bring people up and he would be in charge of that.
I'm sure you had to get up there and tell a story or do something. Maybe you have to sing. Yes. Okay. Yeah. What'd you sing?
I forgot the name of the song. Friends
in Low Places.
In Low Places. Yeah.
That's a good song to sing.
Yeah.
It's a good Rook song. I forgot about Fran Mill, man. That guy, I saw him at a Rockies Padres game. And he's the only human I've seen on a baseball field that was similar to Aaron Judge's size. That guy is, like, different thick.
Yeah, he's huge.
like
he's so big. Yeah.
That's my official question, is Fran Mil Reyes is different thick.
Yeah, he's huge.
It's crazy. You still digging, John Boy?
Yeah, I can't find it. It's from 2013.
Long time ago. I'm old.
I guess final question. Have you looked at any of the old videos of, like, LeBron throwing the first pitch to CeCe and been like, yo, Bron, come back home again. I'm here.
No, I actually have never seen. I did see LeBron throw out a first pitch, but I didn't know it was – I didn't know CeCe caught it. Or has LeBron – I'm sure LeBron's thrown multiple first pitches at Progressive.
Oh, I'm sure he had an open invite.
Yeah.
Come through, man.
But no, I haven't seen it. I always see video of them when they were in the World Series and LeBron going crazy in the suite.
Even though he's a Yankees fan.
Even though I will say that. LeBron just, I don't know. He loves the Cowboys, but don't know why he likes the Cowboys, but likes the Cowboys.
Everybody has that friend. They love the Cowboys. They love the Yankees. And they love, like, the Celtics or the Lakers. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yankees-Packers is a combo.
Yeah.
That's a weird one. All right, here we go. Let's watch, and then we'll let you go. Let's see. Puke face
end
ploof.
On this.
Puke face ploof. Taking CC deep. So you just puked. That's what you're saying.
Yes, I did.
Let's see.
91 right down
that
the middle.
Was right
wow.
Down the pipe.
Thank you, CeCe. Thank you, Brett. Oscar probably would have robbed that
gets
one.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm impressed. It's hard to get one out of there sometimes.
Thank you. Look how sick you look.
Thank you. I look sickly there. I do.
Yeah.
Get me off
the
screen.
Look at this slow-mo of you running sick.
I look a little sweaty there, a little clammy.
Yeah, you do look like you just spent some time letting some throw up go there.
CeCe looks thin right here. It's a thin CeCe.
I think, well, he got really thin one year and then he lost all his velocity and he said, yes. And his, what's his saying? Like more
mass equals gas.
Mass equals gas. That's what CeCe says.
Thank you, BBD.
Oh, yeah.
they tried to get him to be skinny for like years, and he finally did it. And then he was couldn't throw fast, so then he told all the Yankees, like, shut up, let me eat whatever I want.
When you're CC, you can do that. Yeah. Well, shoot, Oscar, this was awesome, man. Do we need where we find you on Twitter, Instagram, Twitch? You getting the COD games up on Twitch yet or what?
No, I got to get – well, listen, I feel like I'm at the level where me and my other buddy, we can get – but then there's a couple other guys in our squad that we're still waiting to – for them to elevate their game up a little bit. But okay. They're getting there. So
I got you.
What's the what are the Instagram, Twitter plugs? We'll get go send everyone your way.
Osmer, because I just had to get on. It's Osmer21 like, on Instagram, and then
go
Osk_Merg on Twitter.
Just send all those Skip Bayless takes his way.
Yeah. No. All the Skip Bayless videos go straight to Oscar.
Yeah. Try not to send too many. You'll ruin my day.
That's a good one.
Thanks for joining, man. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. I had a blast.
Dude.
Awesome.
Good luck this year, bro.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Sorry about the Plouffe highlights. We don't normally do that.
No, I enjoyed those. I remember I grew up and he was banging.
Thank you, bro. Appreciate that. Look at me. Appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, man.
All right.
See ya. And there you have it, Oscar Mercado. We really appreciate him coming on. Go follow him, blow him up, tell him you liked enjoying his story. Indians fans, you're welcome.
Yeah.
Got some Puig stories. Puig just knocking the ball out of his arm when he's trying to throw it back in and asking why, and Puig going, uh-huh. That's who he is. Like, that's who Puig is, and I'm glad that the stories match up.
My favorite story he told was his debut and how he had zero equipment for it. And I think that doesn't get talked about enough. Guys, fans are like, this guy came up, he's ready for the show, it's so freaking awesome. And then in reality, it's like you scrambled to get up here. You're probably on a plane the entire day, you know, taking taxis, doing whatever you have to do to get to the field, and then you don't even have your own gear. Like, think about that, dude. It's a joke. He used somebody else's bat or a bat that he had that was old, somebody else's cleats. That's funny to me. But it happens.
It's something I never even think about. And like, comfort goes a long way when you're put in like probably the most nervous situation you're going to be put in. You don't even have the comfort of your own shoes.
Nothing.
God.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I did talk about Buxton wearing my cleats when he debuted. I got them authenticated because I was just like, I'm going to give them to him, whatever. And then at the end of the year, we'd always send a big box of stuff to like the Dominican. Like, you know, whatever we didn't use, extra stuff. And I put those cleats in there. So some kid in the DR is rocking Byron Buxton's debut cleats.
That's wild.
Which is, I think, is actually awesome.
Pretty cool. Yeah. They sold them and they bought a new house.
I really liked, and again, I know nobody actually cares about our baseball perspective, but man, the emotions of baseball transfer from when you're 10, 15, 24, 34, because as I said in there, and you guys were talking about when you're hitting, you get that first hit for the day, it's like you get a little loosey-goosey in the shoulders. Let's see that next at-bat. Let's make a day. You talked about saving it on the back end. 1-for-4 is so much better than an 0-for-4. And I don't know. The other thing that was going through in my mind when he was talking about shortstop, and it was that conversation was, A, great that coach was telling him, like, hey, don't worry about it. You can play center field.
Did you see his numbers in triple?
Oh, yeah. He booted a couple. He booted a couple. They were Jeter-esque, if you will.
45 errors in one.
I wanted to go into that. You know, I wish we could have went into it a little bit more, but people need to know these minor league fields suck, okay? So I think a lot – that has something to do with it, too.
Well, I think what was interesting – he's mentioned it was mostly the throw for him, which, again, I think a lot of people know that feeling. If you've been on, like, more so the left side of the infield, but if you throw one away and that next time you got to make a throw, I mean, you're swimming in your own head a little bit. Like, I know for me it wasn't at the same level, but I like playing a little third base. And, man, when that throw leaves you, You're on an island. Trevor, I'll let you comment on it more than myself.
Yeah, yeah, I did at the big league level. That's the most embarrassing thing I've ever done in my life was play shortstop the way that I did. So I know where he's coming from. It's not a good feeling. You're right.
Most embarrassing? You got to have something better than that. Come on.
Airmailing balls into the stands on a routine ground ball is very embarrassing.
Oh, well. Yeah,
so
we'll get BBD on the video for that. So
there's, I'm sure there's quite a few.
Yeah, I've collected a few clips in case I need them.
Thank brutal. You, BBD. You know what? You pandering to our guests.
Yes.
I kind of love it. I was wondering why you're wearing a LeBron jacket.
Should that be a running bit now? We just find out like an interest that the guest has and then make sure that BBD's geared up. Even if it's something stupid. Like if they're a big AC/DC fan, we just send BBD an AC/DC hat.
I love it.
Just constantly like BBD's our pander. The audience would be in on it. You know, we'd be like, you know, the guest would just naturally be like, oh, I like your hat. Just wait for that. Got him.
Hey, give me a blue chew, Jim. I need one.
All right, well, let's wrap up and then tell me how to get one.